Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, covers all things NFL. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're great. Rex Rhodes live from Charlotte, North Carolina. It's his favorite day of the year with the tournament beginning, and he's picked against Tom Izzo and Sparty, so he's off to a roaring start.
Yeah, they're losing for sure. I also picked against them in the first round.
I also got him really mad at me. Well, he didn't get mad at me, I guess, but I got the internet mad at him yesterday, Charles, so you'd be very proud of me.
Did you say something negative about Tom Izzo?
No, I asked him a question about the NCAA tournament, and he gave an answer that people – went nuts on, so I'll send you some links later.
Definitely. All right, I want to hear that. It sucks, like, this time of year being an NFL reporter, because you're like, you go to fill out a bracket and you're like, I haven't watched almost any college basketball at all. I'm so completely lost. And of course, we're doing our bracket challenge at Yahoo, and they want us all to talk trash to each other. I'm like, I'm going to be pathetic. I'll probably finish last in our bracket challenge. So, yeah, I mean, it's James Madison basically ended my season. Like, that was such a terrible start for Michigan State, and I got my nose so far out of joint, fought Michigan State fans on Twitter, bashed Izzo. That was pretty much it. It ended day one for me.
Oh, yeah, you did. Well, pick them that? Today. Yeah. Pick JMU against Wisconsin. There's one for you.
There you go.
Oh, is that you? You're going to pick James Madison over Wisconsin, huh?
I did.
I don't know. I did watch Wisconsin beat Purdue, and I was pretty impressed. So it's hard for me. I don't think I picked them to lose in the opener. I do have a few upsets, but nothing that's backed by any legitimate information. So we'll go ahead and avoid talking about my bracket.
Rex Road hates the Big Ten.
You want to talk about what? Rex Road hates the Big Ten. Yeah. I do too. I do too. No, I think my final, and it's totally biased. My final four, I have, and you can tell where I live, I have Houston, Iowa State, and Baylor.
There you go.
Those are three teams that I've watched. So, like, I'm impressed by defensively, and I like to pick defensive teams. And so those are three in my final four, but I'm sure it won't happen. It's totally geographical bias. Like, it's the handful of teams that I've seen actually this year, so I end up picking them. But, yeah, no Michigan State. They're not making it out of the first round. Sorry, Tom.
So, Charles, if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan today, how are you feeling about the Russell Wilson-Justin Fields combo at quarterback? And how do you envision that scenario playing out here in terms of, is Russ going to start the whole year? Does Justin Fields eventually get in there at some point? How do you view that quarterback situation?
Well, first and foremost, it's a competition. Like, don't believe the public narrative that, like, I know they're saying, like, Russ is the starter. That's fine. I get that. But if Russ struggles at all, if Fields excels, Russ isn't going to have that job, you know, in perpetuity, if Fields shows that he's the more viable player. And so a couple of different things, how that came together. I think I told you guys this before, you know, there were front office elements, coaching staff elements that really liked Justin Fields in the draft. There was a natural connection. When Fields came available, I was like, yeah, I mean, the Steelers clearly would be interested in this guy. But then when Russ ended up there, it felt like they wanted to make Kenny Pickett viable still. And so I'm like, well, you got to cross him off the list, because it just makes no sense to bring in a guy with 1 year of contract control when you already have Kenny Pickett sitting there. Well, you know, when the Eagles started snooping around Fields, they started to snoop around a number of different backup quarterbacks, and Pickett had 2 years of contract control. I think even though schematically it's a little bit of a question for me, or maybe the Eagles are just going to change their scheme to more of a normalized passing game or a passing attack, that's what opened the door there, I think, for Pickett, though, the 2 years of contract control. The second he was out the door with Pittsburgh, I immediately went to Twitter and I'm like, it's the Steelers. Like, this is clearly where he's going to end up, and here's why it makes sense. The Steelers having Russ on that 1 year minimum salary deal gives them a financial, like, hole at quarterback where Fields can come in and they can actually trigger his fifth year option, which is absurd. It's over $25 million for the fifth year option. But when you add the salary that Russ gets in 2024, the salary that Fields gets in 2024, which is like 3.2. And then that $25 million option, really what you're looking at is like a $31.2 million quarterback salary hit over two seasons. That's cheap. That's crazy. You're basically averaging, you know, a little over $15 million, which I think would have put him like in the next two seasons from like 18th on the quarterback salary scale. And you're getting a look at a young guy that you really like, who I think will be in the mix there in terms of competing. And, you know, it's Russ kind of gets screwed in this scenario, unless he plays. I mean, Russ can keep that job. He's just got to go and ball out and be what the Broncos thought they were going to get. But Arthur Smith being there in Pittsburgh is a natural schematic fit for Fields. They got him cheap. I mean, the sixth round pick graduating to the four is just the carnage of the 2021 quarterback draft class is insane to me. Mac Jones traded for nothing. Justin Fields traded for nothing. Trey Lance traded for a fourth, and Cowboys probably overpaid for that. You know, you can't right now. Zach Wilson, they couldn't trade him for a bag of peanuts. It's, you know, even Trevor Lawrence is the success story out of that class, but hasn't quite reached the ceiling that we all thought he could, at least up until now. But four out of five guys in the top 15 picks just absolutely being, you know, lost causes with their first franchise. This is pretty remarkable, and probably I would tell people going into this next draft that have a team selecting a quarterback, don't get over your skis on this one, because if J.J. McCarthy is coming off third or fourth on that draft board, you know, this class has the potential to be like that 2021 class. Looking back in a couple of years, we could look back and be like, wow, five teams, maybe six teams select a quarterback in the first round this year. And it's just like a massive, huge red flag later when we look back at it.
Yeah, it's that is wild, and I could see that for sure. So let's stick with the top of this draft, Charles. Marvin Harrison Jr., not doing anything. I wonder, it's almost like he just knows like the Cardinals are taking him or something, or
sure.
Is this what we're going to see more? Does it matter at all to anybody?
I don't know. It's not great. I'll be honest with you. Like the completely opting out, I think even when he decided to do it, I think people were skeptical. Like, okay, yeah, he's not going to do anything at the combine, but there's no way he's going to completely blow off the pro day and every, like, there's no way we're going to get to draft day and Marvin hasn't run a 40. He hasn't run a gauntlet anywhere. He hasn't caught any passes. He hasn't done any drill work. Literally nothing. I can't even tell you the last time the guy talked to reporters. I think it's a red flag in terms of, you know, it's not like he doesn't have any competition. He does. We talked about Malik Nabers before. Very, very good, you know, wide receiver. I would say maybe like 1B next to Marv's 1A. The thought is he will do stuff at the pro day. So if Nabers goes out and he runs fast, like let's say he runs in the 4.3s, he goes through the drills, you know, gauntlet, whatever it is, and, you know, adds to that part of the process, I could see Nabers being selected before Harrison in this process. And I'm sure there are teams, like maybe my problem with it is he doesn't see the value that NFL teams are number one, maybe he doesn't work out in his first spot and he's viable to them because, hey, they got the medical on him. They loved him. It's like Justin Fields, right? They loved him in the pre-draft process. They loved the athletic profile he had. But from an analytics standpoint, if Marv goes through all these drills and everything, just normally like every other prospect does, it gives teams a comparative profile down the line to add to sort of their aggregate. It does matter to the, you know, to team analytics and things like this. I get he doesn't care, and that's fine. And if he shows up to the NFL and he balls out, and nobody's going to care. They'll just shrug and they'll be like Lamar Jackson doing everything his way. And as long as it always works out, no one's going to look back and go, well, that was the reason why. Now, if Marvin Harrison shows up and he's okay on the NFL level, and then there's questions, they're going to look back and go, you know what? He didn't go through stuff in the pre-draft process because he was going to run, you know, low, you know, high 4.5s, maybe borderline 4.6s in a class where we saw a bunch of receivers run 4.3s. He's, you know, maybe running through the gauntlet, his on field speed, the GPS tracker wouldn't have been as fast as other guys. Basically, what teams are going to say is he knew once we started to pick him apart, we were going to find some things that maybe didn't necessarily match up well with other wideouts. You know, I don't know. I doubt it. His tape is so good. I don't think it'll matter. He's going to get drafted. If not the first wide receiver off the board, definitely the second wide receiver off the board. But it's, you know, it's not something I think that teams want to see happen again with elite level prospects. And I do think there is some complaints about, like, hey, is this an NIL thing? Like, is this what's going on now? Like, are we basically dealing with guys that are professionalized before they get in the process? So in their minds, they're like, I don't need to go through an interview. Like, I'm Will Hunting. I can walk in and get whatever mathematics job I want wherever I want to go. And, you know, NFL teams definitely don't want to head into that. There's more complaining now in the NFL about NIL than ever before. And I think it's been this last probably, you know, year of the cycle that we've gone into. I've had NFL teams tell me, like one GM was like, I'm starting to get worried about whether or not we're going to have some guys come in and go, yeah, you know, I'm not going to play special teams. Like, I'm not like developing basically opinions about what their job should or shouldn't be before they get to the league, because they're already making millions of dollars before they get to the league, and how that's going to change guys' mindset. So it's not just college coaches complaining about NIL now. It's also now NFL coaches and front offices that are starting to become more and more irritated by what they feel like is some guys altering their mindset on whether or not they actually have to put forth effort to get a job in the NFL.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, continuing our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. And Charles, looking at the way the draft board is kind of shaking out, I feel pretty good about three quarterbacks going somewhere in the neighborhood of the first three picks. With L.A. trading Keenan Allen, I feel pretty good about them taking wide receivers. So, I mean, you could see three wide receivers, three quarterbacks off the board before the Titans pick at number seven. So, number one, what do you think of that and the opportunity maybe to get Joe Alt? And number two, now that Atlanta has signed Kirk Cousins, if a team like Minnesota wants to trade up to get J.J. McCarthy, do you think they'll have to? How high do you think they'll have to trade up in order to do it?
Well, in terms of the six picks in front of the Titans, I feel like we're almost guaranteed at this point that you can lock in three quarterbacks. Now, you can argue about the order of those players. I don't know how real this stuff is about Drake May, you know, having a lot of issues on tape. I've definitely heard that more and more since the combine. You really heard a pretty strong band of complaints about, you know, some of his accuracy issues downfield, some of the decisions that he was making. You know, the apologists, I don't want to say apologists, the people who were arguing the other side of the ledger were basically like, look, his offensive line was terrible. Here's all these different things that were going on that affected how he played. And then, you know, the flip side of that, you had the McCarthy, you know, people who really liked McCarthy in interviews, who liked the skill set, who liked the fact that he's so young and feel like there's a ton of untapped potential there still. But I think, look, we're going to get three quarterbacks that go off probably in those top three picks. It feels pretty safe. The Cardinals, if they deal back from four, I think there's no question that's a fourth quarterback. So you're talking about at least four quarterbacks. I think there's no question Marvin and Neighbors are very likely top six picks, depending on how the trades shake out. And then Odunze, I would look at him at six with the Giants. He had a great interview with the Giants. They love him. A lot of teams really, really like this guy, not just the on-field tape, not just how he performed at the combine, but he has a very sort of gravitational pull to him in terms of his personality. I only saw him on the podium when I was at the combine. He was really good, though. Gave thoughtful answers that didn't feel like they were pre-planned. Had some back and forth with reporters that was pretty good natured. Like, you can tell he's got some charisma to him. And I can see, you keep hearing this kind of Larry Fitzgerald comparison for him in terms of an NFL comp, I think you can kind of see that and how he will also or has been a leader in Washington's locker room. So to me, yeah, I think that leaves the pick of the litter at seven in terms of offensive tackle for the Titans, and it makes continues to make a ton of sense. I mean, I think you pour as many assets into that offensive line as you can, considering what else you've already added in free agency. So I think that's a really good situation for the Titans. In terms of the Vikings being a team that moves up, I think acquiring that second first-round pick is a no-brainer. Like, you don't have a quarterback. You got Darnold there, obviously, on the one-year deal, but they clearly want to move up. They know that the two teams they have to deal with right now are the Raiders at 13, and I think the Broncos are at 12. Well, you know, you're sitting there going, well, can they jump us? Can they get up ahead of us? The Broncos are going to have a tougher time. They don't have the ammunition. Unless they want to move Pat Surtain, then I think you're talking about a different ballgame. I think the Broncos could definitely get themselves positioned possibly at the fourth overall pick. But, yeah, I think the McCarthy aspect of it makes a lot of sense to me. The Darnold deal right now, that 1 year's a bridge deal. So the thought process is, okay, they trade up, they get whoever they want, whether that's McCarthy or May at four, and then you just sit them for a year and you give them a real red shirt and behind Darnold, and then you've got your quarterback next season in 2025. So yeah, I would think that Minnesota's the team. But what's interesting to me about the quarterbacks in the first round is that when I was at the combine, I heard from a handful of people who are like, hey, Raiders love Penix. Like, this is real. I would, you know, who are definitely connecting Penix to the Raiders. So I start to call around different, you know, front offices, teams were talking about Penix, and they're all like, in the first, you know, they're all like it's a 13th pick. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I mean, it's kind of shocking to me too. Maybe I'm, you know, it's coming back in the end of the first round or whatever. And then I saw Daniel Jeremiah a couple of days ago, who I really believe in his connections, the way that he evaluates players. And I know a lot of my sources tell him everything. You know, he puts Penix at 13 to the Raiders. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, that's now solidified in my mind. I'm not the only one hearing this. It's not just BS that's getting rolled out there. And then like Bo Nix, some teams are like, dude, he's a third round pick. They're like, there's no way he's a first rounder. And then other teams are like, he might be 12, you know, he might be the team that, you know, he might be the guy that goes off 12 at with Sean Payton. I can't tell you how the second tier of these quarterbacks are going to shake out, but it's odd to me that you sort of have some teams that are like, yeah, Penix definitely could be, you know, upper half of the first round, if not for his medical. Others are like, no, definitely Bo Nix with the experience and how he fits some offensive schemes. It feels to me like we're going to get definitely four, probably five. And the way it typically goes in the NFL draft for quarterbacks, we're going to end up with six quarterbacks in this first round. And they could potentially all go inside the top 13. Like, that's insane to me. I'm an almost 50% hit rate of quarterbacks in the top 13. But great for the Titans, because you're sitting there and, you know, you don't necessarily have a need at wide receiver. You don't have to force it. If, though, one of those elite guys just happens to be there at seven, hey, if you know, it gives you an ability to take best player available if it's a really elite guy who somehow trickles down the board to seven. Or, you know, the top of the Joel, like, teams love him. Like, he's a legit anchor left tackle in the NFL. And if you're taking offensive tackle one at seven, you're in a pretty good position, particularly considering it's a pretty decent offensive line draft in the first round.
So quickly, Charles, changes coming potentially here. Hip drop tackles, kickoffs, How about 18 games?
So hip drop tackle, I think definitely you can feel it. Like, the league is turned on it with a vengeance. Like, they're starting to push more and more data at reporters about, here's who's getting injured on these plays, when these plays happen, here's how often the play leads to an injury. Got to get rid of it. The NFLPA is totally against it. I think their problem is that, you know, it puts players in a position where they now have to change how they regulate, how they tackle guys. And if the league bans it, they know it's going to lead to a bunch of fines and all these other problems. So they're trying to protect players from getting fined and having all these other issues. I'm just telling you now, once the league gets behind it and it feels like there's an overwhelming majority against hip drop tackles, I expect that's going to end up being banned in the upcoming owners' meetings. Kickoff change, you know, they're out for the kickoff. They've been out for the kickoff forever. Just minimizing collisions and collision speeds. So this whole idea of shifting more toward the XFL style of kickoffs, which would basically put the kick return team and the kickoff team, the vast majority of the players, within 10 yards of each other once the kick occurs, it's almost certainly going to happen. I didn't realize how weird it looked. I had never seen that, so it's my fault for not looking at how the XFL kickoffs looked. But once somebody actually put it up on a board for me, I was like, it just looks weird. It's very unaccustomed to anything I've ever seen. And now that you have to like announce onside kicks as well, because of just the alignment will be different for onside kicks, but we're going to see the kickoff change. I don't have any question about that. And the 18 games, I think expect it to become more of a topic of conversation the next year, 2 years. Like, they're a long way from a CBA, you know, renegotiation or the next CBA, but Lloyd Howell taking over as the NFLPA's new executive director. I think league kind of sees an opportunity here to start pushing more and more. Hey, let's get this 18th regular season game on the rails. And I do think the NFLPA will be open to it, but it's going to be extremely costly. And I think down the line, what you'll hear is they want a huge jump in percentage of revenue. So I think they're at 49 right now. You'd want to get to like 51, 52, so potentially $500 to $600 million league-wide into the salary cap to start. So that kind of a jump. And then I think they want to do away with the off-season program for teams. Like, I think the NFLPA would probably agree to 18th game if they could get the league to say, okay, we won't do anything with players until the very beginning of July. And then what we'll agree to is, from July until the beginning of September, it will be a massive ramp up process to get everybody prepared for the season. I don't think most teams would agree to that. I don't think most coaching staffs would agree to that. So I think that that's very unlikely to happen, but I'm just telling you, if they really want that 18th game, if they eliminate most of anything that players have to do with teams up until, you know, the start of July, and they're willing to give up a bunch of money, they could potentially get that 18th game. But it's not going away. I had somebody from the NFLPA tell me, look, they've been hot on this since 2012. And they're like, it's not going away. They're like, they're never going to give this up. And we're going to have to think realistically about what we would need to get in return and figure out whether players would be comfortable with it. So, yay, Super Bowl in like late February. That's all I can.
Congratulations.
I'm like, are we seriously going to do this? Like, am I going to? We're going to cover the Super Bowl, go home, repack for a day, and then immediately head to the combine, which is how it already feels. But yeah, we're headed toward the era of literally having an NFL football game on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at some point, and 18 games in a season. I would predict
player safety, huge priority, that player safety.
Yeah, absolutely. The league's like, but we're getting rid of the hip drop tackle and the kickoffs. So
there you go. What else do you want?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Good stuff. Wow. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us and enjoy the tournament today. Should be fun.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And thanks, Joe, for the compelling video where it appears you're like in the cave and cast off with Tom Hanks doing your show this morning. Turn a light on, man. What the hell? Your bed's not made. That's the problem, right?
That's actually on the other side, but that's a fair point. I'll open the window. Thank you, Charles. Look like I'm being interrogated.
All right, guys. Have a
good
day. Thank
you, Charles. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Charles had to say. More of your thoughts on the NCAA tournament as well. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.